Hello and welcome to Roster Doctor, where we fix up your roster. This week, I am joined for the first repeat guest with Across the Bifrost, Sung Soo. How's it going, sir?
Great, thanks for having me back. Exciting.
Yeah, so actually a bit of backstory on you being the first double guest. I talked about this a bit in the Discord, or a couple of Discords, I think. I was literally recording this week's episode with Jacob from Xavier Protocols, and my power went out, and because he's in the UK, there was no way I could get it recorded on time for the release date. And so thankfully, you were able to come on short notice. We had been planning this episode for a little while, but we had to bump it up. But so I like to think that it's fate somehow. That the hand of fate turned off my power so that you would be the first returning guest. How's it go?
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in fate, but that's fine. We can go along with this, yeah.
I'm
fate. None of my decisions mean anything. They've all been predetermined. That's fine.
Oh, I'm actually a huge fan of determinism, but I love to make romantic statements about fate, even if I don't believe in it one iota. But like I said just a second ago, you came in with a Brotherhood roster. I definitely want to cover the newest, hottest mutant releases. I love Brotherhood. I love everything about them. The dual affiliation, both Magneto and Mystique have brutally effective leadership abilities. So the flexibility between the two, either a power focus, throwing focus, attrition fighter, or a kind of scenario-focused high mobility leadership, I think being able to pick between the two is very powerful.
Yeah. So I listen to a podcast. I guess it's not obvious, but I do listen to a podcast, even when I'm not on it. And I want to say that this list isn't as refined as a lot of the guests you've had on. And some of that is because of how new Brotherhood is out, and then some of that is a little bit of the deterministic fate of us coming together. So the focus of this roster is really to play Magento as much as possible. So I did want to be clear on that. If anyone's listened to Across the Bifrost, the podcast I do with Pat, excuse me. I am not a huge dual affiliation roster guy. We will go into that as we break this down, but this is a single affiliation Brotherhood roster. I like it a lot. I've got a decent amount of games with it, just over, I think, 11 games if I check my spreadsheet, with some permutation here, and then some things are still up for debate. But this is not as refined as, like, I love the episode you had with, Morgan, Australia.
Yeah, Morgan Reed.
Morgan Reed, there we go. And like, he has, like, grinded that roster and really, really fine-tuned it, right? This roster is more like a initial cut of a piece of stone or something. But I really like Brotherhood. I've been playing them a lot, and I'm excited to talk about them.
Yeah, so without further ado, let's just go through the characters real quick. You've got the obvious four Brotherhood characters, so Magneto or Magento, his more flamboyant brother, Mystique, Toad, Sabretooth, and then to round it out with your villain characters, you've got Vision, Green Goblin, MODOK, Shuri, Valkyrie, and Wasp. So the first one I want to shout out is Green Goblin. I haven't really seen a lot of Green Goblin in Brotherhood, but his reactive terrain destroying seems really promising. Have you gotten much dojo time specifically with Green Goblin in here?
Yeah, so what do you think Green Goblin's biggest problems are, Mark?
Power generation.
And what does Magneto do in spades for his team?
Power generation.
Right. So when I look down the initial roster, let's take the core of Magneto, Mystique, Toad, right? That's going to bring me an 11 threat. Green Goblin talks me up to 15, right? While Toad can dump power, he dumps it. He's kind of like a goat rodeo, right? There's a lot going on, but nothing much really happens, right? Instead, if you're feeding that power over to Green Goblin, he becomes a very powerful character on his front side, right? Yep. So they're more incentivized to do damage to him, which gets more power generation, which gets him flipped, and then he can really shine on his flip side, right? So I love Green Goblin with some early power addition from Magneto. I think it's really cool. The unexpected, like you said, the trick or treat throw he can do for power generation during your opponent's turn is really cute as well. So I really like Green Goblin in there. He's really shined. I'm happy to use him. It's a gorgeous model. I really like him on the table as well. So I've had nothing but good results with Green Goblin myself.
Yeah, I definitely can see the appeal here. I've played Green Goblin a few times. I played him to drop off Venom in Web Warriors, and I think I played a few out and out Spider Foes games, but early power is a huge problem. I think I tried him in Cabal once even, but his builder struggles to do damage, so it's very hard to get him power. So Magneto being able to give him multiple power in a round without any like dice involved on Green Goblin's side is just such a ball buster. And as long as you're blowing up size 3 terrain with Green Goblin's ability, it's functionally net zero power. Because you're spending 3 and then you're getting 3. It's spread across 3 characters, but it's still functionally free in the end, as long as you're fine with moving the power around. So I really like
it. Yeah, we get into some nuances about like where power is worth more, right? Like your first, second, and third point of power are worth more than like your fifth, sixth, and seventh, right? And when you distribute that across multiple characters, you hit different things. But anyway, I just really like him. He's been a welcome addition. The last thing I want to mention is him being able to make energy attacks is super useful, right? Magneto is just doing damage via throws and physical attacks. Mystique is double physical attack. Toad only has an energy attack as a spender. So it's nice to kind of break that up as well.
Yeah, and then the other standout character to me here is Wasp. So I'm assuming this has something to do with the fact that she's energy heavy and has a throw?
Yeah, I've waffled back and forth on this, so let's start with I have 4 3-threat characters. That is probably one too many, if we're being perfectly honest. But Magneto is super expensive. I should probably drop one of these 4 threats for a 2. The other option is I probably don't need both Green Goblin and Vision. As much as that pains me, I probably should look at dropping one of them for a 2 as well. Or is the other option. But let's talk about Wasp. So she does have a throw, which I value very highly. I don't think, I talked about this on the recent episode of Across the Bifrost. Actually, you will come out before my episode does. I will talk about this in a future episode of Across the Bifrost. I don't think you should take an all-throwing team with Magneto. You can very rapidly run out of terrain. You become a very one-trick pony. Your opponent can kind of zone you just based on, honestly, where you can impact the board based on what's throwable. So I like having characters that can do multiple things. Wasp is very fast, which I appreciate. Her and Mystique make for a pretty mean side. She can also flank out there with Toad. Her ability to throw things is very valuable, obviously. She is herself durable, and I do love that she brings energy attacks along with her. So I generally speaking, really, really enjoy her. She doesn't need a lot of additional power from Magneto to really get going with Wasp's Fury, which I think is an incredible spender. It's cheap. It's not going to do a ton of damage, right? But 6 energy defense plus a free advance tacked onto it. She's already so bouncy. I've really enjoyed her on the table. I think that her and Ant-Man are a little undervalued. If you listen to my podcast, you know, I prefer Wasp to Ant-Man. And then in this roster particularly, right, Ant-Man is another physical attacker. I have those kind of in spades. So Wasp is a welcome addition for me. What do you think about her being in there, right? Zemo is another one that could definitely slot in there. Rocket Raccoon is another one I've definitely thought about filling that slot.
Yeah, I think you need a 2. We'll get into this at the end for the changes, but I think you desperately need a second 2 in here. Because having a second 2 opens up a lot of options.
So originally, I guess for the evolution of the roster, right? Originally, Wasp was actually Winter Soldier, which allows you to build like a really low-to-the-ground Brotherhood roster. It also gives you that rear D attacker that I didn't have at that time. Shuri wasn't in the list.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you that I need another 2. What I will say is I have 3 4s in there, and I think I should drop a 4 before I manipulate my 3s. Because the 3s are super utilitarian, right? Let's just assume I'm always taking Mystique because she's amazing and she has one of the best tactics cards ever printed. Then I have Shuri, Valkyrie, right, who are very functional characters, very, you know, they kind of excel in their individual roles. And I really like Wasp with Magneto. So I honestly think when I look at Vision, Green Goblin, and Sabretooth, I should drop one of them. And as amazing as Vision is, it's probably Vision. He's the character out of them I take the least. Now, some of that might just be fatigue because I play so much Avengers. I'm honestly not really sure. I'd have to, like, you know, process that with my psychiatrist. But I think it would probably be dropping Vision for Rocket Raccoon off the top of my head. Though Okoye is also very tempting.
Yeah. I've only played Ant-Man and Wasp a couple of times. I think I played Wasp twice and then both of them together once for a Vibranium Heist game. They're deceptively mobile. Their attacks are okay. Their defense can go to an okay amount. I don't know. I just feel like there's more unfair threes out there. So, like, unless you're specifically wanting some particular synergy with her, I think you're pretty much always taking Shuri or Valkyrie or... I'm trying to think of some other really good undercosted threes right now.
Storm. Sure. So let's talk about it in conjunction with Magneto, right? Magneto gets full selective reroll if you're close to him, right? So I actually like the synergy of Magneto on a flank with Wasp, right? You're kind of forced to come into them, right? Wasp having the innate stealth that benefits Magneto, right? Magneto has the push associated with him, so you can pull people into range for Wasp. And like I said, she's really bouncy. So I've liked her. I agree that she is definitely not cemented into this roster. I understand why your gut would be to drop her, but I have enjoyed Wasp, and she fills a role for me that Valkyrie doesn't always accomplish.
That's fair. And yeah, if you're finding niche mileage out of her, I think she's perfectly fine. I just find there's more obviously powerful characters that usually take up the spot. But if you're really enjoying the synergies specifically with Magneto and Wasp, I think that's perfectly fine. As a solid stealther, lots of defensive tech, energy. I think she kind of has a lot of little things that can add up specifically here.
Yeah. I'm also just a sucker, honestly, for attacks that don't give your opponent power, which her builder has. It's only a 5-dice builder, but again, I'm just a sucker for things like that. So I've really enjoyed her. I do understand the argument for dropping her, but again, I think that's more Vision than Wasp, personally.
That's fair.
If you wanted to argue dropping Wasp for Baron Zemo, like, I fully get that. And then you could also make, like, a Magento Cabal list at that point because we have MODOK. There we could swap out Vision for Red Skull. We could definitely get some extra flexibility in there if we wanted to go that route.
I honestly think you have more than enough flexibility between Magneto and Mystique. Keep a mono affiliation, but like have lines for both of the leaders. Because like Mystique can do some real ball busting stuff on D shapes. So I mean, we'll get into this more later on the Crisis segment, but I think whenever you see a D, dropping Mystique might be the right, or making Mystique the leader over Magneto might be worth it.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it really
the free
on the
interaction isn't nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you end up with the D where you have to interact with plus something like evac or something like that, right? The Mystique is definitely more tempting because my roster in itself will struggle in order to be able to interact and pick things up, and I don't want to necessarily get behind. The same way that Asgard can kind of leverage that, hey, I've got two power, I've got two interacts, right? Mystique can do something similar, which is, again, another one of the reasons that I don't load up on all of... If it was just Magento and a bunch of throwers, then me swapping into Mystique honestly feels pretty bad, right? But by having some good utilitarian characters around there, right, you can kind of audible into Mystique and still have a pretty solid roster. And that's honestly where Vision comes in the most. But again, kind of the point of this is to play Magneto, so.
Yeah. And speaking of Magneto, let's go on to tactics. Because you're taking Magnetic Refraction here. How are you liking this? Because, like, it's essentially just better Psychic Fortress.
Well, technically it's
range differential, but otherwise it's...
It's slightly less expensive and it has a shorter range, right? And for those of you who don't know, what it does is Magneto may pay 2 to play this card. Magneto doesn't have to be in his activation to pay it, but Magneto does have to be the one to play it. Then ally characters gain cover while within 3 of Magneto this round. If your squad's using Brotherhood affiliation, return this tactics card during the cleanup phase, which is absolutely bonkers, right? So for 2 power a round, you have cover, which is just insanely powerful. It is pretty rare for me not to, and let me be clear, this isn't like you get cover if they're outside of range 2. This is like Rocket Raccoon. You have cover unless they tell you specifically you do not have cover.
Yep.
So it's just a very powerful card. You get tons of value out of it. It's really amazing, and it's one of the reasons that I built Brotherhood mono affiliation. if we glance at this really quickly, right, I have Asteroid, Magnetic Refraction, and Blind Obsession, which is supposed to be the card whose name eludes me, something with a D. Deception. There we go.
Yeah,
right?
Deception. So let's actually talk through that card, because not everyone might have seen it, because it wasn't spoiled by AMG. It's just in some random unboxing videos for now. It's an unaffiliated card. Mystique has to be the one playing this card, and it's free. There's no cost. Choose an enemy character within range 4 of this character. If there are no other non-dazed enemy characters within range 2 of the chosen character, you may advance the chosen character, its speed, towards this character, being Mystique. So it's a free move as long as your opponent isn't near any allies.
Correct. Yeah, and the way that it's worded in there is a little tricky, but you nailed it correctly, right? It's enemies to the Mystique player, so allies. So it doesn't break things up like Bodyguard or things like that, but it allows you to kind of leverage and manipulate a weak flank or an early moved character who's kind of out of position, right? Like the first character to move to the midline or something like that. You can really help exploit that. It's an incredibly powerful card. I mean, it doesn't cost any fucking power, and you get to move your opponent. It also has some weird interactions. Pat and I talked about it in our episode. With the advance and towards, it gets super funky about what's legal there. I don't really want to go into that. You can listen to the Across the Bifrost episode if you want to hear it. But one of the ways to play around it is to use terrain well.
Exactly. Let's just go through the list of tactics again real quick. Asteroid M, Field Dressing, all you've got, Magnetic Refraction, Med Pack, Climbing Gear, Psychic Shield Device, and Deception. Psychic Shielding Device. This is a really interesting one to me.
Yeah, I could take it or leave it if we're being absolutely honest. Swapping that out for Book of Truth was initially what it was, but like I really fucking hate MODOK, so like Psychic Shielding Device plus fucking Magneto should be a heavy enough dissuasion that I don't have to see MODOK, which is fine. If MODOK does come down to the table, Magneto honestly just like throws things at him until he goes away, which honestly isn't that long. So it's just another dissuasion for it. The last thing I'll say is Magneto does not like moving if he doesn't want to move. So Psychic Shielding Device stopping that for a round can be very powerful. So it's definitely a card that has kind of like squeaked into my 8, but I'm not sure honestly makes it into my 5 ever. So at that point, like, why is it actually in there?
Yeah.
But I've used it a few times and it's pretty powerful.
So the notable card that's missing to me is Books of Truth. Is there any reason why you didn't bring this in? Oh, actually,
yeah,
sorry,
I mean, that was
real quick. So for people who haven't seen the Books of Truth yet, it's a Brotherhood of Mutants reactive card that's essentially recalibration matrix, but only for your roles, not your opponents. So at the end of the modified dice step, you spend 2 and you get to reroll all of your dice. Even if they're skulls.
Including failures, yeah. So it's important for the timing of that. It happens at the end of the modified dice step, right? It's another good dick punch, for lack of a better word, for MODOK, because like he blanks your wilds, right? But then that's earlier in the step. Since you're using this afterwards, your wilds count if you reroll them with Book of Truth, right? So it's a very powerful card. That's literally the card the PSD is fighting for. So they're kind of fighting for the same spot. And I get it. Book of Truth is very powerful. But for me, personally, Magneto destroys whoever the heck is near him.
Yeah.
So my main concern is ensuring that Magneto is close enough to attack people. Mm-hmm. Book of Truth doesn't help me with that. PSD does, right? So PSD and Climbing Gear are both very powerful. The other one I had in there for a little while, but I dropped, was Extreme Conditioning. We can kind of get into that, but Magneto being able to move along with his base.
This is going to be the really third powerful episode in a row where I have a thing with Extreme Conditioning. Go ahead and finish your thought, but Extreme Conditioning baffles me.
Well, I mean, that was my entire thought. It's like, I like it when he moves long instead of short because it's further. The other card that was in there when I was riding MODOK really hard was actually Aim Lackeys, but that card got dropped out.
Yeah, especially if you're very focused on the mobility of Magneto, that's important, but on the other hand, how often are you taking the two of them together, and how often are you able to aim lackeys in early rounds where it super matters? Well, round 1 specifically.
So I guess let me be clear. I don't think I want to aim lackeys early. I think I want to aim lackeys reactively when you get a Shuri push or a MODOK bow or an Enchantress, whatever the heck she does. I can't remember her name. Let me be clear. When this all settles, like, Angela should be in this roster too, but she's not out.
Yep.
So I kind of look at it as a mid thing. MODOK and Magneto are amazing together. Like, that's like this weird, it's like peanut butter and pickles, where it doesn't sound like it's good, but it's like oddly good once you actually try it. They're a really good combination. They're expensive as all get out, but they're insanely powerful. And often people will be able to disarm or soft control one of them, but not two of them. And they can be extremely punishing. It's incredibly not friendly. But again, it's a lot of points, and they both honestly need support from the rest of your team, which may or may not be there. MODOK also doesn't really benefit from the affiliation either. He tends to be, as you know, flush with power, even outside of Cabal. He doesn't tend to be hurting for power too much. So there's a little like anti-synergy there. And that's ultimately why Aim Lackeys isn't in there, right? I value Team Tactics cards, I think, higher than the average player. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I really don't like winging it. So for me, for a card to be in there, I really have to be taking it a lot. And it has to have a pretty big impact if it's going to be a corner case card. And since MODOK, honestly, if we're being honest, he's not played, I'd say, over 20 or 25% of the time, I just couldn't justify him having a card.
Yeah, I feel you. There's definitely splash characters where you put in a card for them and then you realize you're never taking them, so you take out the card. And then maybe it even leads to you taking them out. But 20%, I think, is fine enough, especially considering how incredibly powerful MODOK is when he actually hits the table.
Right, okay, but why is MODOK incredibly powerful?
Because he turns power into infinite amounts of damage and control, which Magneto is easily able to supply him with power.
Right, okay, but the counter is if I'm playing into MODOK, who is incredibly powerful, and I have Magneto plus PSD, how good do you feel about dropping MODOK?
It's hard to tell. I think both of the times I've played MODOK into Magneto, just ignoring PSD, I've literally one-shot him both times with MODOK. So I have a hard time putting a gauge on Magneto. He's harder to daze on his injured side, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the math in front of me. The odds of you one-shotting him sound low. It sounds like 35%. I'd have to do it, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, double psionic blast with Zemo and Shuri support, it's not that far out of the realm.
I still think you're in the 30s, but we can come back to the math on that later on, right?
I tend to run lucky, but yeah, so I have a hard time evaluating that. And PSD,
right, all things, if that bombs out though, right, what are the odds that MODOK or that Magneto picks up MODOK? Because it is shockingly high when you compare it to other
very likely.
Right, and that's, and again, that's one of the big reasons. PSD giving me that additional die is pretty incredible, allowing him not to bow me out if the plan doesn't work, right? Because that's the worst case scenario, is like, you fill me up with power, but you're able to bow me out, and I was at max range 4 anyway. So like, I'm at this awkward stage where I have to spend actions getting back in there. And yeah, then we combine the additional die with a cover die, potentially for magnetic refraction, right? He's very tanky that turn. All of a sudden, I'm up to 7 dice with 1 guaranteed. It's nothing to sneeze at.
Fair enough. I think you've made a reasonable defense of it, to say the very least. I'm starting to get sold on it.
If for those people that haven't listened to me rant, like I tend to be pretty tempered on Across the Bifrost. I think that MODOK is by far the most powerful character in the game. He is by far the most frustrating character for me personally to play into. So yep, anytime I can take something to give myself a leg up into him, I'm willing to do it. So I definitely agree that my hedging towards PSD is heavier than other people's. Disarm was also a consideration, but I just honestly don't have the characters that close a lot of the time. But I will admit that I definitely have colored glasses when it comes to this.
No, I think those are all reasonable things. If you don't have a plan for MODOK, whether it's screwing him on scenario or bringing something like Wakanda Wave push spam, I think you're in for a bad time. Just in general, I've pretty much always been a dirty MODOK abuser, and psychic shielding device has never quite gotten over the line whenever I've seen it in play. But I think Magneto and MODOK versus MODOK is one of the ways where it will.
Yeah, it's just a nice defensive buffer that you can tack on to that. Magneto, once he gets rolling, tends to be pretty flush with power, and Magneto is one of those characters that I feel doesn't need a lot of help to take out MODOK. Again, but to circle back and then we can kind of move on from this, like, Book of Truth is very powerful. It is extremely powerful, and it's important, like, we went over kind of how the wild blanking works. It can definitely surprise some people, right, when your expected damage into MODOK goes up so much.
Yeah. And it's a nice little emergency button. So reverse polarity, if you get in super close, has full rerolls on it. So, like, if you really want to do damage, you have ways of forcing it through with Magneto, but having a panic button to not randomly get one shot or spike a damage roll where you think you've got a really good shot because your opponent rolled nothing and you just happen to roll nothing too is really nice, but... I think, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I don't worry too much about the defensive side. I tend to be like, I've got 6 dice. I should be able to tank this out. Not always the case. I 100% get it, Mark. My biggest thing is when MODOK rolls nothing for defense, I want to be able to exploit that. And if I can lean into Book of Truths, right? Because again, it counts the wild because we're past the stage where he blanks them out. That's so powerful. It changes that dice map.
Are you correct?
Yes, because
recalibration matrix. But, so you can't do any rerolls after it. Okay.
Correct. So I cannot use the full rerolls after this, right? I'm using my initial rerolls to set an aggressive dice pool to make you either spend power knowing that I have Book of Truth in the back. You need to spend power to put up an effective defense, whether I use Book of Truth or not. If you don't put up an effective defense, you have the risk of me rerolling with Book of Truth after you blank out my wilds, right? And then again, I'm favored in this roll. I know that you have a low pool. You've already rolled poorly, which is why I'm using Book of Truth. And I have my normal dice at this stage with the reroll, right? Where I am effective half the time and you're only effective right at your lower percentage time. So the timing of Book of Truth was what makes it extra spicy into MODOK.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking it just happened during your modified dice step, not the end. That's a
nope, it's at the end of the step. Yeah, so I'm going to modify all my dice. You're going to modify all your dice. You go, I guess we're good. I go, nah, I got a book, and it's true. It's not the Bible. And then we roll through, and then I do more damage.
Okay, that's a really interesting indirection. Actually, that makes it even more like recalibration matrix, because recal does it in the count successes step, if I recall correctly.
Very similar timing between the two of them. I actually thought they happened at the same time, but I don't have recal in front of me. Obviously, the advantage is your opponent doesn't reroll the dice. Don't get me wrong. I really like Book of Truth. We can look at the tactics. Like, I just don't know what comes out for it.
No.
It probably is PSD. I get why it's PSD. I just don't want to take PSD out right now.
There's also the thing of, what's it called? The Book of Truth. It feels like a card that you plan on always having in your five, not a tech card. So if you don't feel great about having it always in your five, I don't think you should take it. It's nice MODOK tech, but like, in reality, the card's so generic outside of, like, that weird MODOK interaction and, like, a couple of other effects that you probably want to be taking this always or never.
Yeah, and I guess it's good to circle back a little bit. I do not think that Magneto needs help dazing people most of the time into 95% of the MCP field. There are some select characters where we do. MODOK is one of them. That's when Book of Truth comes in. One of the limitations of Book of Truth is it only works on allied Brotherhood characters. So we're talking Mystique, Toad, Magneto, and I don't take Sabretooth that often, but he's still on the roster, right? Sabretooth and Magneto are really the only ones that really are ever tempting for me to use this on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, so it's just a limited card with limited applications. I don't take 50% of the characters I can use it on too often. That's why Exceptional Healing is not on the list. So I like the card. It's a good card. You can put the card in. You probably wouldn't be wrong, right? All you've got is another card that really is only ever used on Magneto. And I could definitely see you arguing for dropping all you've got and putting Book of Truth back in there.
So actually, quick note. I don't think we ever quite hit on this. I assume. So your five, your typical five is Asteroid M, Magnetic Refraction, Med Pack, and then what are the final two? All you've got, Field Dressing or Deception Climbing Gear?
Deception Climbing Gear.
Mm-hmm.
I put in All You've Got Field Dressing when I think I'm going to be running into something where I want that kind of double activation. I am tempted to put field dressing in normally, but it really depends on the scenario and other things. There are definitely times where I will drop Asteroid M. I know that's crazy because it's really good. There are also times I'll drop Magnetic Refraction, but those are pretty rare, if we're being honest. Field dressing and med back kind of fight for that fifth slot. So Asteroid M, Magnetic Refraction, Climbing Gear, Deception are kind of the four cards that I have most often. And then that fifth can kind of rotate in, whether I see value between med pack or field dressing coming in that slot, right? If all you've got comes in, I also have to make room for field dressing. So there's definitely some flexibility in there.
Yeah, that's mostly what I expected. I was thinking of it more in like a full-on modular thing where it's Climbing Gear and Deception or field dressing all you've got 100%, but it sounds like it's a lot more fluid, which I like.
Yeah, I guess to be clear, there are times they don't take Mystique, which we'll get into later.
Yeah. And Deception only works with Mystique.
But it's incredible. It's
an insanely powerful card.
So let me be clear, like, since the Banned and Restricted, which I am all for, I have changed a little bit the view. I've already said I value Team Tactics cards very highly. If we look at the unique Team Tactics cards that Brotherhood is able to bring, there's a lot of oomph there, right? Asteroid M, Book of Truth didn't make the cut, and we've kind of talked about how amazing of a card that is. Magnetic Refraction and Deception, that's really powerful. And then he also has, like, Magnetic Crush, which I don't personally like, but you could argue to take it, and I wouldn't make too big of a face.
Yeah, all the super attack cards, except for Seven Suns, are kind of eh. I tried to make the Thanos one work, but I just couldn't.
I mean, I don't like Seven Suns either, but that's another conversation. We don't have to talk about that now.
Yeah, let's go down that rabbit hole another time, and let's actually move on to Crises real quick, unless you've got anything left on Tactics.
The biggest thing I'll say about Magnetic Crush is Magnetic Crush allows you to make a giant, insanely large dice pool. And when you combine that with Book of Truth giving you a reroll, that's when it's a little more tempting, right? A tactics card for just a giant attack, you're still subject to like the standard deviation of MCP dice.
Yep, 100% agreed. You really want rerolls if you're playing Magnetic Crush, because the only reason you're playing that card is to just straight up one-shot someone. And you want insurance.
Yeah, and then again, we're kind of going over on time, I know, but Doom Prophecy is another card that was considered for tactics but didn't make the cut. We can talk about that another time.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because Magneto and Vision and MODOK all have super low physical defenses, but if you're getting value. But let's move on to the Crises. So first, for Secures, you've got Mayor Fisk vows to find missing witnesses, Infinity Formula goes missing, and Gamma Wave sweeps across Midwest. So I don't really see a pattern here. There's no obvious force. You're not doing the E force. You're not doing a D force. You're not playing Super Dead or like to the Energy Defense Matters kind of style. So what's your thought plan on going with Secures, if you get a Secures?
I full-on stole this from Morgan Reed, to be fair, and I think he's one of the best players in the world. I don't know him personally, but I've been very impressed with his results on the tabletop, and he speaks very eloquently when he does speak. I want to be able to force as many weird deployments or weird point values as I can, because I think my roster is flexible enough to plug into any of these. So I'm going to look for what my opponent is bad at, and then I'm going to try to force that as much as I possibly can. So it's not like my other roster where I'm always going to force a D, or I always want to be able to force a C, not a C, an E, an Echo, for example. So I want to be able to leverage different things in these regards, right? Now, when we kind of look through all these things, right, Fisk is the one that jumps out at me the most of like, okay, why is that in there? And I know it sounds weird, but like the Magneto affiliation ability allows me to work around stun, I think, better than most opponents will. So I'm willing to take incremental advantage there. Infinity Formula, honestly, Magneto is just a beast. He can cover both of any single side Bs. And then the incremental healing for him, since he does have such a high hit point pool, is really powerful. And then like if you group up in the middle of the map, for Gamma, there's just obviously a lot of power coming down that pipe.
So I haven't done the math on this, but for Infinity Formula, can Magneto drop one of his things at range 3 and then AoE 2 guaranteed onto the other secure?
You can stand on the other secure and be out of it, but if you're not towards the very back end, he's going to hit you.
Even with him on the front? Okay, yeah. I knew it was closer.
I believe that there is a little bit of range where he cannot hit you. I would have to honestly double check it. I don't remember, Mark. Mm-hmm. It's enough where, like, if they're that far back, I feel like they're not really contributing anyway, and I'm not too worried about it. But he's just incredibly powerful.
You hit all of the? Never mind. You can hit the front of the opposing E. Standing on the front of your home E.
Magneto can hit two of the E's, right? And, well, okay, that's kind of disingenuous. From the middle E, he can hit one of either the close or the far, your choice and kind of how you want to do that. For me, the threat of blowing stuff up on the opponent's back E is extremely powerful. Right? You think of all the characters that are only huddled back there, none of them want, like, exploding lampposts being thrown in their face, which is exactly what Magneto can do.
Yeah. Any particular reason you didn't take demons downtown? Because I feel like between Deception and Magneto's push, if you're outside of range 2 of his builder, and Toad has a wild push as well, right? I'm not crazy.
Quite frankly, I don't like being incinerated, is honestly what it comes down to. My defenses are not stellar. And honestly, I find the incinerate to be more of a hindrance than a benefit for me, right? I don't have a ton of people. Toad and Mystique aren't going to daze people even if they're incinerated. They will help me get people over the edge. I have incinerate off of Toad's spender, which is utilitarian. Mm-hmm. Incinerate doesn't affect dodge rolls. It only affects defense rolls. So again, I just find myself with, in my opinion, it hurts me more than it hurts my opponents, which is why I didn't take it. Because Magneto's a 3-3-6. If I don't spend 2 points of power, I'm a 3 defense, right? Yeah. If I'm incinerated, that's a 2 defense. And at that stage,
you're going to go down really fast.
Yeah, like 6 stamina isn't enough to be taking a bunch of, like, I mean, we've all seen what happens to Hulk, right? Imagine Hulk only had 6 hit points. Like, it doesn't end that well.
Yeah, I think I was fantasizing about living the dream of, like, a max value shrapnel blast after you pushed everyone onto the incinerate thing end of the previous round.
Yeah, and I think that's a dream that is, like, it's worth chasing. Like, if that's your life goal, you can die a happy man after that happens. But for me, the crackback is a little too hard. Where I'm looking at taking an elite character, and that incinerate really hurts my already kind of undervalued defenses.
They can get on.
And then, honestly, paying 2 power to get 5 defense dice instead of 6, like, it's definitely not as appealing.
Yeah, 6 is definitely a lot more impressive than 5 in a lot of games I've played with 5 defense. Like, 5 defense doesn't feel that great unless you've got a lot of rerolls.
Yeah,
used to having more defensive rerolls, but...
I get where you're coming from, though, Mark. Like, normally, like, an attacky, smashy list, right? We're going to talk about... we've talked about Morgan's a few times, right? That Black Order list, my Avengers, Corvus list, like, yeah, incinerate everything because I'm going to swing through all of you, right? I really only have 1 to 2 characters that are going to swing through you. The rest are going to be kind of be scenario pressure pieces, enabling Magneto to really go crazy and things of that nature.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call. And keep Magneto alive is the name of the game here. So if it's too much of a burden on the keep Magneto alive prime directive, I don't think it's worth it.
I guess a brief shout out. Like, I've heavily considered dropping MODOK for Doctor Strange, but that's like a whole different game plan then.
Oh,
it's pretty
man,
cool though.
That's brutal.
It's pretty good.
Getting up to 8 defense whenever you really want to.
And the amount of power that you can shove back onto Strange from the leadership ability is pretty damn powerful.
Ooh.
Ugh. Yeah, it's
tack
it's
on a soul
cool.
gem
that's...
for the hell of it.
No, that's you went too far. You're not doing that. Again, like, Strange is another one. Like, if you really want to go with, like, a protect the queen strategy, Strange is really, really compelling. I honestly like it a lot, but it just didn't make the cut.
Yeah, and let's go over the extracts real quick. Montesi formula found, mutant extremists target the U.S. senators, and panic grip cities, evacuation efforts continue. Again, no real pattern here, nothing to force. Just three very different extracts with three very different patterns of play. Let's actually talk about mutant extremists, since it hasn't really been covered on the show before, because this is the first episode since it got leaked. So mutant extremists is a 14 threat value C, so the line along the middle, like origin bombs, with three tokens. When you interact with them, you flip over the token, and on the other side, there will be one of two symbols, either an empty safe house or a senator. And there's only one senator. So if you ever pick up the senator, you get rid of the other tokens. Actually, technically, it doesn't tell you to do that, so they just sit there. But you know they're empty, so you might as well get rid of them. But the senator makes you speed slow, one less die on defense and dodge rolls, but you get two VPs around for holding the senator. And I think this is the most insane crisis since Gamma Wave. I'm not sure how much you played on it, but to me, it really feels like the Gamma of extracts.
I mean, it's nowhere near Gamma Wave, in my opinion. It's a very good extract. I mean, there's a reason it's in my list, right? So, A, let me start with, and Pat and I talk about this in a future episode of Cross the Bifrost, which you should check out, and that's the last time I'll plug my podcast. I'm sorry.
No, keep on plugging it. It's the least I can do after you came on short notice.
Pat brought this up, and since he said this in a game we played together, like, I can't get it out of my head. This is what alien ships and Skrulls should have been. So I'm glad they've kind of improved upon the formula, if that makes sense. No one wants.
I'm not on the same page here. I think this is actually a huge mistake.
So this gives obviously a very heavy advantage to whoever has priority, right? Let's start with that, because you are going to have two shots at the shell game, and your opponent is only going to have one. So let's start with that, right? The second thing is, if they have the senator, similar to the power core, do you actually want to be the person that discovers the power core? A lot of situations you don't, right? Magneto is able to whack you. If you're up there picking up the core early, I'm able to use Deception on you as well, which is a very powerful card coming off of Mystique. So I'm able to move you closer to me. So unless you have a great plan on getting up there and moving backwards with someone, you're often kind of stuck in the middle of the map. The last thing I'll say about it is this actually does what Demons Down, what you thought Demons Downtown did. This reduces dodge dice, which is incredibly powerful when you think about the number of throws I'm going to have over the course of an entire game going into characters, especially high value characters. So I like this extract. It is fast. I will definitely give you that. It is faster than people give it credit for. This is going to be out. It's going to be on the table. But if your opponent doesn't have a great plan for it, I feel like my roster is really able to exploit that and taking a pretty early advantage with it.
I agree with most of that. I think this is an incredibly fast scenario. I think it does functionally the same thing that Gamma Wave does, which the team that's more prepared for this outside the band of normal scenario gets a VP differential of two VPs a round, and it starts from round one guaranteed. And so I agree in the sense that I think the dice crises are deeply flawed, because I've literally seen stories of people who, between them and their opponent, literally roll the interact 16 times and nobody gets it. And so
and the game
I like
sooner
that this
kicked
one
the crap out of me in the last TTS league. I tried to flip it 9 times and I just never got the thing. And like a bunch of those are with a reality gem, right?
Yep.
It just happens, right? It's a very low number of dice, so it's extremely random. And
I think it's good that they identified. I think it's good they identified they need to fix this, because this guaranteed scoring round one, unless somebody's a total idiot.
It guarantees to score round
players.
One, right? Because I will just go flip it.
Yeah.
You can pretend it's not there. I'm going to find the senator. Like, I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to Georgia. I'm going to vote. Right.
Yeah. So, it requires both players to be idiots for this to not be scored round one, which I like. I am deeply concerned about the token mechanic, though.
Let me clarify that a little bit.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The senator will be found. I don't necessarily agree that it will be scored round one.
Okay, yeah, yeah. If you don't have a game plan like stealth or a teleport or something, you're probably gonna drop it real quick. But if you come prepared, oof.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you're prepared for me to walk up with Mystique and Deception you towards Magneto, yep, I have more power to you.
Also, there's a number of scenarios where if people misorder their stuff and they go with their middle stuff first, they can literally only bring their flank character to bear, and some of them, unless they have range 3 or longer attacks, probably can't move attack you.
Yeah,
so
a lot.
You can get away scot-free if you play correctly. But
especially
I do
want to... Especially with Toad, who's able to interact with this from that range too, which is actually really powerful.
Yes. Oh my god, Toad is great here. If you can get him enough power, he can pick it up and hop away, which is... Uh-huh. Scary yeah. to think about. And he can pull it off of an ally.
He can take it off of Magneto if Magneto picks it up off your Days character, and I don't mind Toad hiding in the back corner while Magneto is still engaged in the game and punching you in the face with light poles. So, yeah, again, I think there's a lot of synergy behind the way my list interacts with this. But you wanted to talk about the Crisis more, so go ahead, Mark.
I just wanted to bring up one specific point that I find very concerning, and we'll see how this plays out in the long run. These flipping tokens are super easy to manually manipulate. They're like way easier to cheat than dice. And so I think there's going to be a huge headache in tournament organization if this becomes a regular mechanic, because it's really easy to mark the tokens. It's really easy to falsely shuffle the tokens. So now you need to have somebody else randomize them, but you also probably need to do something to the tokens so that they are like tournament provided tokens or something to that effect, if you get my drift.
Sure, and I think this is just while I agree with you, Mark, there are a lot of if someone wants to cheat, they're going to cheat, and it's unfortunate, and it's just kind of the nature of tabletop games and life in general, right?
Oh,
if
100%.
Wants to win that badly, they're going to cheat. Is this a low bar method to cheating? Sure, I will agree with you there, Mark. It definitely, I definitely agree with you there. It's easy to mark the back of a token. It's easy to accidentally, and I'm being completely honest here, have one of your tokens marked, and then you just remember the marking on the thing. So, like, I understand your concern. This already functionally exists with the Doctor Strange shell game, correct?
Yes.
Except there,
but
I think your opponent is picking it.
This
correct.
Is going to see play everywhere.
All I'm saying here is, yes, it's a concern. If you think it's a concern, talk to your tournament organizer. If you think it's a concern, bring your own shell tokens every time. And Muse on Minis is producing, you know, they'll be out next week. I don't mind plugging them. They are producing acrylic double laminated tokens for this, so it's much harder to mark them, if that makes sense. So there are definitely options for it. But at the end of the day, I'm going to assume that anyone I'm playing in MCP is being honest and upfront. I do understand your concern with it, but unfortunately, like, there are so many different ways you can cheat in this game and other games, and I honestly don't think it's a productive rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to bring it up because I'm very concerned about how that'll play out, but like, we're like a year plus out from like real tournaments anywhere, so who knows? I mean, we're going to all be playing on Tabletop Simulator, where the God Emperor machine will randomize this for us.
See, I actually think Tabletop Simulator is easier to cheat on than in real life, right? You could get in there and manipulate the code. The person downloads assets. You're not necessarily aware of it. I've seen that happen in other games. But again, like, if we want to talk about ways people can cheat, like, do you measure people's movement sticks? Probably not, right? Are you sure that they're using a stick that isn't a little bit longer? Like, you honestly would probably notice if you never go through things, right? Unless you're, like, constantly double-checking their measurements. Are you checking to make sure that all of their dice have the correct facing? Probably not. This is a really easy game to have two or three hot dice in there, if that makes sense, just because of the way it rolls. And if the person's smart about it, if it's not all the dice, if it's just like one, two, or three of the dice, you'll probably never notice. Unfortunately, there's all sorts of ways to cheat in Marvel Crisis Protocol. So while I understand your concern there, Mark, it is something that I've just kind of accepted. Like, if the person's going to be a shitty scumbag, they're going to be a shitty scumbag, and it's just not something I'm going to worry about.
That's fair. I might be overselling it. But back to the crises at hand, very happy with all of them in just like a general unfocused split. Again, three different threat values that you can push towards, and all very different deployment behaviors. I also really like Montesi formula for shoring up your physical dependency.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm kind of on the fence about the most, but I ended up putting it in there. I actually really like Panic Grips as evac continues. Like, you're able to evac really quickly with the amount of power
you're
able to toss around there, which is really, really, really powerful. So I like the Crisis Suite in general. And like I said in the beginning, this roster isn't finished. I'm happy to hear about how people kind of grow and iterate upon this.
Yeah,
do you have
and
it
as
record,
tons
how do
of
you,
releases.
How do you talk to your fans? How do the fans of Mark Garreau, Roster Doctor, communicate with you?
Well, sometimes they join me in shit posting on the Tabletop Simulator Discord, but also for people who are still slaves to Mark Zuckerberg, check out Roster Doctor at facebook.com/rosterdoctor.
I want to talk about scumbags. Like, Mark Zuckerberg is the dude who uses loaded dice in Marvel Crisis Protocol.
I should bucket test my dice, but okay. Enough tangents on cheating. Let's get into the actual rosters, because we're 50 minutes in, and we haven't talked about a single team yet.
Woo! I think you told me you wanted this to be an hour-long podcast, so we're right on track.
We're going to speed run this. Okay, 14 threat. You've only got 7 possible teams here. You said you're always playing Magneto, so only 6 are viable. What's your 14 here?
Depends on what I'm playing into.
It's in a vacuum. You always have to be playing Mutant Extremis right now. You don't know your opponent. What's your go-to?
I prefer the 4 threat, and I will oscillate between the 3. I prefer the 4 characters, and I will oscillate between my 3 value threats,
whether I think
Shuri, Valkyrie, or Wasp is going to be more impactful.
So for listeners that don't have Assemble in front of them, this will always be Magneto, Mystique, Toad, and then one of the 3s, either Shuri, Valkyrie, or Wasp. Yeah, I think it's 100%. You should always take the maximum amount of characters you can take on extremists, because you always want to have 2 people threaten if your opponent picks up the thing, and ideally 1 person and a backup if they get dazed and are forced to drop the senator themselves.
I agree, and honestly, I want a cheaper activation to toss out there early, and then I really want Deception with Mystique. So if you look at this, if you're watching the video, right, that really kind of narrows down the amount of viable lists that are here.
We don't do videos anymore. The editing work was too high.
My bad.
Maybe we'll come back to it if I can automate it with, because I'm recording with OBS, so it all technically outputs as a video. So I might just use my PowerPoint in the future. We'll see. I kind of want to get back to doing that, but. Enough tangents. Let's get back to this.
I think it's crazy that people listen to podcasts on YouTube. Like, there have been people that have asked me to just, like, put a stinger on my podcast and put it on YouTube, and I just don't get it. I don't understand why you want to watch a video just to hear me talk. I don't really understand why people want to hear me talk, but I really don't understand why people want to watch a video with no relevant information to just hear me talk. I don't understand it. I know it's a thing. I know people like it, but like the old cranky person to me just doesn't get it.
So I think at least in Roster Doctor's case, since I can actually show the team permutations up on the screen, there's some
value
for
making
it easier to follow.
I 100% agree that there's a lot of value to what we're doing for you having a video. I don't understand why people, there are tons of podcasts out there that just upload their podcast to YouTube and they get thousands of listens and it doesn't make any sense to me. Someone explain that to me, please.
Boomers, they right, barely figure threat. Out YouTube, and they can't figure out Spotify.
I don't think that's my demographic, but maybe.
So 15 threat, you've got to be playing Gamma or Herbs, one, the other, or God help us all, both. I still have nightmares of that meta, where it was literally that 70%+ of the games. Well, actually, they're fond memories. I love that time. But so, here, are you playing the obnoxious MODOK tower? Or what's your game plan into the...
So, I'm not going to lie. you can do some interesting things here, right? You can run the Magneto MODOK Sabretooth if you're running on, like, a dead Gamma. And that's a really powerful combo to throw in the middle of the board, is what I'll say. Do you have the support that Magneto or MODOK normally have? No, but I have 2 of them. So it's not going to be very friendly, and I'm going to be controlling priority. Normally speaking, I'm going to go with one of the 4 threat teams. I really, really like Mystique. It gets a little weird because ideally I'd have Mystique and Shuri, and that's almost impossible to do. So you do end up having to make some hard decisions there. But I've liked Magneto, Green Goblin, Mystique, and Toad.
Yeah, I think that stands out as just a good all-around 15 threat team. You've got good type options, mostly physical, but you've got a decent amount of energy there. Once your power systems start going, Green Goblin starts doing a lot of work. Mystique and Toad have a lot of really powerful utility, and Magneto can just pop off. And when you're playing in low threat games like that, you're either playing a normal secure with a really dead extract, or you're playing Gamma with something. And I think
something is going to be pretty indicative of what I end up playing, right? So a couple different options. I will again say that MODOK, Sabretooth, and Magento is actually a pretty powerful team if it's Gamma and like Wakandan Herb for some bizarre reason. I don't know why they play that into me.
Yeah. Let's move on to 16 threat. So Cosmic Invasion, Fisk Vows to Find Witnesses are the only two. So it has to be one of those two secures. So it's either a really weird D or it's the weirdest C.
Yep. So on a D, I want to run Shuri is what I will say. If it is the really weird C, when I say I want to run Shuri, it's probably something along the lines of Sabretooth, Mystique, Magneto, and Shuri. If I had another two, we could go Toad and another two in this situation. But in this roster, again, we don't.
Yep.
Right. The other roster I like for Fisk is Magneto, MODOK, Mystique, and Toad. I actually think that's a pretty compelling roster as well.
Yeah, I like that one a fair bit. I can see the value of Shuri. I like jamming her in here. I think I would definitely flirt a lot more with the Magneto list options. There are a few. I know you're avoiding it, but I think especially if you're playing Cosmic Invasion, being able to have mobility on that D off of her leadership is very powerful.
Want to flirt more with Mystique teams is what you're saying.
Yeah, but I think in the context of the Magneto teams, I think you pointed out the two obviously correct ones. I could see some weird cases where Valkyrie comes in instead of Shuri.
Matchup dependent for sure, right? But if I don't have someone to camp back on that D, like Shuri kind of fills that role really nicely. I will say real quickly that like Mystique, Vision, Sabretooth, Valkyrie, Toad is actually a pretty mean forward-facing team there, where I'm just dropping a token on my home D and then I'm pressuring the two outside ones pretty hard. So you can do some pretty cool things there.
Yep. Let's move on to 17, which is the broadest category, but ironically doesn't have that much options in this roster. There's only 10? Yeah, there's only 10 17 threat teams that are affiliated and have a leader.
Really penalized again for not having that double two, right? If you look at this and you have a visual, you can see the four threat characters, and then imagine I could drop that for two threat characters, right? So again, I understand that's a limitation in the roster. We can talk about that later on. You can go with a low body team, you can go with a four threat team if you really want to manipulate priority. But honestly, I like the five threat teams. The five threat being Magneto, Mystique, Toad, and then two of my threes, pick your choice, right? And this is really, really, really comes back to like I can take Shuri Valkyrie, I can take Shuri Wasp, I can take Wasp Valkyrie, depending on what the crisis, what the scenario, and what the team kind of dictates.
Yeah, do you ever look at any of the super compressed MODOK Magneto towers like MODOK Magneto, Sabretooth, Toad, or well, actually that's the only one that has both of
that's MODOK the only one that can actually still hit the affiliation in it. I do if I think it's powerful. A lot of the times though, like running that four threat team with a double slow person is pretty hard. I have looked at Magneto, Green Goblin, Sabretooth, Mystique more. Goblin has that little bit more mobility than MODOK has, right? He's able to kind of zip me around a little bit more. But again, it depends on what I'm running into. It's nice to have MODOK in the pocket for that team, but really he's in there for the threats we're about to get to.
Yep. Let's bump on up to 18 then. We've got Portals Overrun City with Spider People and Fear Grips World as Worthy Terrorized Cities. So no matter what, you're playing on a D of some form. You either super care about energy defense or you're getting taxed on your tactics cards.
Yeah, and maybe both. There's a lot of granularity here, and in the general shell, and again, sorry to be a broken record here, Magneto, right, Mystique, Toad, Goblin, and one of my threes is definitely my favorite.
Yep, I think that's a very solid roster. You just pick Shuri, Valkyrie, or Wasp to taste, and it'll just work out of the box just fine. It's a good, balanced team. Magneto's handing out power to everyone. He's a little bit slow, but you've got tools to mitigate that. You've got mobile characters. You've got fighty characters. You've got support characters. You can just tailor it with that three slot to whatever you want for the job that needs to get done. I like the modularity there. I think you're really selling me on the threes.
So this is the other place, though, right? We haven't talked about Vision that much. If Vision was a two, right, we could do Magneto, Mystique, MODOK, a two, and Toad. And I think that's also a pretty compelling 18. So I'm pretty close to dropping Vision, but for the time being, he's still in there.
Yeah.
Vision is just like my third four, right? And my third four is going to get used less than my third three, which is why I'm leaning towards dropping a three for a two as opposed to a four for a two as opposed to a three for a two.
Yeah, 100% agreed on that. I think as much as I love Vision, I think Sabretooth and Green Goblin are more likely takes. And so I'd rather just, I mean, we'll get into this at the end, but I think jamming another two in here opens up so many options.
Yeah, and honestly, Wong's pretty cool too. I don't really like Wong, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah. So next we've got 19 threat. I assume we're going to go with the bog standard here. Well, actually, at 19, we can play...
MODOK comes into play, and then I get real excited. So it's normally Magneto, MODOK, the other two, right? Mystique and Toad, and one of my threes. And that's a really compelling team for me.
Yep, and I think if you wanted to play Brotherhood across the board plus Green Goblin, I wouldn't hate that either. MODOK's more powerful, but I think if you don't feel great about playing MODOK on the board as is, playing those five right there, you're going to get a pretty decent result off of.
Yeah, so what Mark there is saying is you drop one of the threes and upgrade it to Sabretooth, and you drop MODOK for Green Goblin, which is, again, roster that I'm perfectly fine running. Sabretooth has been more impressive on the table than he reads on his stat card. So, yeah, I'd be willing to play one of those as well.
Yeah, I haven't had much games with Sabretooth yet, but I have played with Wolverine, who I think is a similar pattern. And I was suitably impressed. I thought he was just going to be an okay four-threat physical beater. Which there are a lot of in this game. But I'm assuming Sabretooth, with his mobility and aggressive and the high damage output once he starts getting going, especially if you can give him a ton of power, just seems like a really all-around solid package.
Yeah, I actually think him and Wolverine fill pretty different roles, mainly because the movement values are so different. What I'll point out is, right, I have Mystique, Toad, and Sabretooth, which are all pretty mobile, pretty fast characters, which can put like a lot of weird pressure on you. And then, is Sabretooth Black Panther? No, but his damage output is pretty impressive. He has 6 stamina on that healthy side. Mm-hmm. Untamed Force is definitely something you have to count in because he is able to make those out of activation claw slash, and he has very big damage spike potential, which is not normally how I like to play the game, but if you're able to hit the triggers for Savage Predator, he can do some pretty explosive damage. So Sabretooth and Wolverine, I think, both suffer from early power generation. Like, how the hell am I going to get power on these characters? And once Magneto kind of helps out with that, then Sabretooth can kind of really shine.
Yeah, that was my experience with Wolverine to a T. He was kind of awkward until he got power, and then he did pretty solidly. And, I mean, the similarities diverge after a point, because Wolverine flips into a total monster. Sabretooth is just more of the same. And Wolverine's obviously, like, tankier and just heavier in general. But Sabretooth is a great mobile offensive piece. And I still want to see someone live the dream where you run him up to somewhere. They charge somebody in to kill him. Green Goblin blows up terrain on the guy, and then Sabretooth counterattacks after the first attack and dazes. Have you had that happen yet in your 11 games?
I've had goblin days a couple people for sure, right? And then the last thing I'll say about Sabretooth is, like, I have Mothership, right? So having as many long move characters that are Mothership eligible is also definitely a plus, right? And I know Toad isn't a long mover. Like, I get it. He's a medium move. But he also has Hop. Like, he gets around the board pretty well.
Yeah, out of curiosity, how often have you early Asteroid M'd just to, like, dump Magneto in the middle of the board and just be like, he's your problem now, guys?
I've Asteroid M'd Magneto onto my opponent's Gamma, knowing when I have priority heading into round two, and they normally shit themselves.
Oof. Yeah, the bottom of round two double move Sabretooth into an Asteroid M. Mm.
Yeah.
Quality stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not complaining.
Okay, finally, we've got 20 threat. This is just alien ship crashes in downtown. So you're playing a super dead, super random extract at super high threat. The secure can be whatever. What's your default here? And interesting note, your team actually physically can't play six wide, even if it wanted to. Because correct. Since you don't have the two, there's like really awkward math to get to 20. Because with all four, basically you can either do three Brotherhood, two non-Brotherhood, or four Brotherhood, one non-Brotherhood. And that either means MODOK or you're bringing two fours.
Yeah, we've kind of blipped around it because this roster is kind of, again, I've played a lot. I've dozered with some people. Mark obviously worked with me before the podcast. So it kind of masks the fact that, like, Magneto is hard to build a roster around, right? A six threat affiliation is, it's a lot, especially when you factor in the Brotherhood isn't super wide yet, right? I have A4, A3, A2, and a six. So, like, there just inherently aren't that many options. What I'll say here is there's a couple, two different modes that basically jump out at me. Like, do I want to bring MODOK, right? Mm-hmm. And that will depend on the extract.
Or the secure, excuse me.
But that very valid question. And there are definitely times when you want to bring MODOK, and there's all sorts of permutations here. And this threat value for me is where Vision sometimes becomes really appealing, because I like Vision Goblin leaving Mystique at home for some rosters. But for the most part, I'm going to take Mystique and Sabretooth and Magneto. I'm going to take one of my threes, and I'm going to take Green Goblin. That is normally what I am putting forth on this one. So normally I'm leaving Toad at home. My core has become Sabretooth, Mystique, and Magneto. I'm taking one of my value utility threes, and I love Green Goblin. But you could substitute in Green Goblin for Vision, depending on matchup. And then if I think MODOK can do work, right, MODOK is going to come in as well.
Yeah, I think if you're trying to fit in MODOK, doing Magneto, Goblin, Mystique, MODOK, Toad, very good. And then Magneto, Toad, all your fours, I think is another good default. But if you want to go Vision, Sabretooth, three to round it out, I think that's also fine. Lots of solid options here.
There's a lot of different ways to you can quote unquote kind of skin that cat, right? The last one I'll say that I like is I actually really like Magneto, Sabretooth, Toad, Shuri, and MODOK. I think that's a very powerful combination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, without knowing the secure half of this, it's kind of like hard to make a definitive call. But I think there's a lot of great options here. So I wouldn't feel hugely pressured to like rebuild the roster to like fix the quote-unquote 20 threat problem, because basically nobody likes playing 20 threat. I think people feel very uncomfortable at high threat values, and B, really? Even if you were forced into it, I think you've got a bunch of fine rosters here.
Yeah, I didn't know people felt uncomfortable at 20. I thought people preferred larger threat games. Yeah, I like my 20 threat lists, like, and for me, I have enough granularity in here. If Mark does make this a video, you'll see this is one of the highest list options I have, especially when you factor in that I want to run Magento as the leader. A lot of the other threat pages that Mark will maybe put up have a bunch of rosters where I'm just not going to play him because, like, for the most part, I'm not interested in taking a Mystique team. She's really good, to be clear. I'll do another one when I get like another 20 or 30 games with the roster. She's very powerful, but the purpose of this roster is just for Magento to do things.
Yeah, and I think at 20 threat, you want to be playing Magento.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, like, Mystique doesn't interact with alien ships pretty well, so you probably just want his leadership, unless the secure half of her leadership will just hard win you the secure half of the crisis you're playing. I think you.
Yeah, and much I don't know how many Magneto. I don't know how many games you've played with Mystique, but that leadership is kind of nerve wracking. Like, if the opponent has like a Black Widow or someone to just like double move and just like pick off all of your things, it's super fracking obnoxious. So,
You kind of have to go into a game plan where like you play D Split or Fisk to parody, and then as soon as you tie things down, you just bum rush your opponent and you're like, I'm going to take the one you're standing on. If you want to double move over there and like give up the attrition advantage I just got to like maintain scenario parity, fine. But I'm going to do some damage to you and you're not going to do some damage to me. Or I'm going to have a huge scenario advantage. Is kind of the way I've seen it being played. And it makes people feel very uncomfortable to play against that. I think it's definitely nerve-wracking, as you said, but I think there's definitely a value for just like making people feel uncomfortable and imbalanced. I think actually, speaking back to Morgan Reed, who for War Machine listeners, I feel like Morgan Reed is like the closest thing to a JVM that Crisis Protocol has right now. He is like a naturally talented player. But enough accolades. Morgan's amazing.
See, I think naturally talented actually takes something away from Jake or Pat Dunford or Morgan, right? They do put a lot of work in, right? Like, yeah. Jake Van Meter plays a ton of games, and he's always thinking about the game, right? When Jake and I have gone out to dinner or we've talked about things in the past, he is always super insightful about stuff. I'll talk to him about like a Grimkin problem or a Convergence problem. He's like, you know what? I don't really play or think about them that much, but I'll get back to you. And the next time I talk to him, he has all these different thought points on them. So
that's fair. I think Pat's like in that same pantheon, I would say, of like all-time GOAT War Machine players. But I always got a sense from JVM that like he was almost like playing on instinct rather than like, I don't know. Pat seems very putting a lot of consideration into things, and I feel like JVM is just like
I think the way they express right. and talk about the game is different, but I think at the core, once you've played enough War Machine and to a lesser extent Marvel Crisis Protocol, you don't need to have reps into the newest thing. You understand that it's 75% this and 25% this, right? So you're able to extrapolate what it's going to do on the table. Mm-hmm. But I get your
yeah. A bit of an aside. I want to hear your War Machine Mount Rushmore at some point, but let's not do that on this episode. But I just going back to Morgan real quick, I think he played Black Order in a fundamentally like not really played way up until this point, where he essentially let Black Order's leadership, which was widely considered quite possibly the worst in the game, I think Guardians of the Galaxy is definitively the worst, but I think there were a lot of people campaigning for Black Order to be worse. Considered worse, and I think
Uncanny X-Men Blue. It's fine.
But I think Morgan really showed that you can basically force the game into a particular shape where those free VPs off of kills are bonkers, and it changes the game into something that people feel uncomfortable about. And I think that I can't even remember where this point started, but Mystique. Mystique teams can kind of do a similar thing, where the leadership seems really bad until you bend the game in a weird shape, and you know what that weird shape is like, and your opponent doesn't, and you leverage that to basically, not quite gotcha them, but like, get free unforced errors out of them, and leverage that to a win.
All right, I'll give you a discussion point I always meant to put on Across the Bifrost, but we haven't yet afterwards. So my first point is I think Mystique wins more games early and wins less games less when people get used to her, which is not a way that I like to play. Mm-hmm. I think what you were hitting at with Pat and JVM and Morgan Reed and some other players are they are able to do something that I fundamentally can't, which is fine. Like, I'm pretty humble, as you know. I did really well in War Machine the 1 year I traveled, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of the way I did. My finishes were great. I went to enough large events that I think it was proven. It wasn't a flash in the pan. It wasn't a fluke. I got there with extreme repetition and grinding with a singular list. Mm-hmm. That is the same way that I approach Marvel Crisis Protocol. And because the meta evolves so much in MCP, I am at a disadvantage because of the way that I like to learn through repetition. I think what Morgan, and I don't know Morgan. Morgan, you can tell me to shut the fuck up if I get this wrong about you. I don't know Morgan. I only know him vicariously through the work he's done. I know Pat pretty well, is what I'd like to say. I like to think I know Jake decently well as well.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to very quickly adapt to their meta because of their fundamental understandings of things. And I think that is what allows them to shine. I think that might be why you call them instinctual players. I think both of them are able to identify things in the meta that other people haven't yet. And if you're at the front of the meta, if you're able to see what the meta currently is and take what's new and adapt it and really leverage that to your advantage, you're able to gain that incremental advantage. If people aren't as prepared for it, people aren't ready for it, people haven't listened to a roster doctor and across the Bifrost about it. And I think that's what those three players in particular do very well.
Yeah, that might entirely be the case. Yeah, when I interviewed Morgan for this show, I was just very impressed on the insights that he had specifically into Black Order. He really turned around my opinion on how Black Order functioned, and like he showed it by making it all the way to the finals, just running mono Black Order, which I think if you told me that Black Order was in the finals, like before the league started, I would have laughed in your face.
But again, I think he identified the meta, identified where mm-hmm. he could exploit things, found something people weren't playing and are playing it through, right? I think he's very good at assessing things quickly. And I'm also very, I don't think any of us are expecting him to play Black Order in the next league that he chooses to play in. I think he will be very fluid and always kind of at the front of the curve as to what is and is not powerful. And I think Pat goes along, honestly, the same route. Like the roster that Pat was able to make with Defenders pre-BNR, I think was extremely powerful. And he kind of was able to see that quickly. He was able to osmose how it fit in the meta, and it was very powerful, right?
Yeah. I like that Defenders roster. It was just all around solid. Okay. But enough talking about great competitive players. I could do tons of episodes. I love talking about great competitive tabletop players. It's just a fun thing to talk about. But let's do real quick scenario discussion. So I'm going to give you three crisis combinations that are out. We're going to talk about what threat you would pick and what team, if there's a particular weird team you would go towards. First one, Cube plus Gamma. So 17 or 15 threat.
Depends on my opponent's roster. Next.
Hammers plus Witnesses, so 18 or 16?
Heavy 16, but depends on my opponent's threat.
Okay. Extremists plus Demons Downtown. Extremists, depends on my... not Extremists. So 14 or 19?
Depends on my opponent's roster.
Oof. Oh, man.
You said we're short for time.
Yeah. Okay, we'll sprint through it. What you'd like to change? I think we both want to get a 2 in somewhere. I think Vision is the one who probably comes out. I think Rocket or Nebula are the two most likely ones to come in.
Ooh, I don't agree with Nebula, but that's fine.
I think
you could make a compelling argument for a bunch of different twos. They all kind of have their own different thing they can stand on. I think I would probably be dropping Vision for a 2 is where I would be leaning right now.
Yep.
As for tactics card swaps, I think the PSD is still the weakest card in there. I could be compelled to drop that for the Holy Book. I could be compelled to drop that for something else as well. I'm also not 100% sold on All You've Got, mainly because it has to come in with Field Dressing, and I don't have a ton of characters that want to use All You've Got. So those are the two that if people really wanted to pick at the list, I'm not going to fight too much if you think dropping one of those is better.
Yeah, I could see All You've Got and Field Dressing turning into Patch Up and something.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as Crisis, it might be Gamma, as weird as that sounds to say. I have to think about it a little bit more. It's probably Gamma, and it's honestly because I don't love my 15 threats, if that makes sense. But I do think that there's a lot of opportunities for me to force 15 where I like my 15 a lot more than you like your 15. So, and then like, again, Magneto approaches playing against Magneto on Gamma is fundamentally different than playing against MODOK on Gamma. So me being able to threaten that, right? Your Gamma answer is quite often like, what is your MODOK Gamma answer? Is what is your Wakanda Wave Gamma answer, right? And the question that Magneto presents is a different question, is what I'll say.
Yeah, I can see Gamma coming out. I could see Infinity Formula coming out. I think I'm pretty happy with any of the others.
Oh, see, maybe. I like Infinity Formula, but that's fine.
I'm kind of take it or leave it on it. I could see it going a number of ways. I also kind of really like Extremis here. Just because since you're going to be so flush with power, that means you're going to be reliably turning that into healing on everybody. Which can be nice.
Sure.
But depends on how you feel. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. So, across the Bifrost, we're going to link to the Patreon. We're going to link to whatever social media presences you've got. But everybody should be listening to Across the Bifrost. Pat and TT are great. I think Pat's actually going to be coming on to do the X-Men half as well. So, you might be hearing him on this next week. Any other things you want to plug? Well, I've got you on here.
Nope. That's, yeah. Thanks to everyone who voted.
Yeah. Good job. Hopefully the runoff elections go blue. We'll see. But I'm going to call it a night here, and hopefully this won't be the longest episode ever by a couple of minutes. But yeah.
I do have a question before we go, just real quick.
Yep.
When you put bowls in a dishwasher, do you put them face down or sideways?
Bowls? Face down.
Okay, that's fair.
Well, face down if they're in the top rack, sideways if they're in the bottom.
What's the difference?
Doesn't water spray up from the sides?
Spray up from the sides? It would have to spray out from the sides, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like out and up.
So then you orientate them out. I don't understand why you would treat them differently.
Because the top rack has a bottom. I guess the bottom rack works the same way.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I always do face down.
Like, yeah, I always do face down as well. So I was just curious.
Yeah, face down, gang. Good night. Yeah. Bye.